tonight we will talk a little bit, continuing on talking about the three pure precepts. Last time we talked about cease from evil, evil being that which causes harm, the action of evil being actions that arise from or influenced by greed, hatred, and delusion. On a preceptual level, on a moral level, we create suffering, we create harm by acting on greed, hate, and delusion. And a fundamental delusion is turning away from our essential nature, Buddha nature. Do only good, as translated from Dogen. Dogen's commentary goes, do only good. The Dharma of Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment is the Dharma of all existence. So, do only good. Well, cease from evil could be what we shouldn't do, what we don't do, what not to do. Do only good, what to do. What do we do in the world? And as with the whole of the Dharma, there is no template, there's no, well, with existence, there is no plan, there's no program, there's just living our lives. When Reverend Master Jiu went to Japan, she got there and basically was told, when she first arrived, she asked, what do I do now? And they said, just live. Do only good. We think of good as a set of values. It's good to do certain things. Goodness has a particular appearance in the world. It looks like a particular thing. But the Dharma is trying to point at something a little deeper, a little deeper way of looking at things. It's not just what we all agree upon as being good, what looks good. What is good from a deeper point of view? What's good from a place that is not greed, hate, and delusion? Somebody was pointing out, somebody was helping someone and they got hurt. And there was a little comment that, oh, maybe she shouldn't have been helping people. And in one sense, I can understand how you might conclude that, like the consequences of my giving assistance in this way are that I fell out of the truck and got hurt. But in one sense, the good that we're talking about is doing a thing, as Reverend Master Jiu puts it, that is beyond good and evil, beyond right and wrong. It's a thing which arises as good to do in our minds. In one way, we could also say that doing good was doing that which needs to be done. We get up in the morning. It needs to be done. We need to get on with our day. That's an act of doing good. Sometimes we may be ill and we need to stay in bed, and that may be an act of doing good. In one sense, doing good is a practice like any of the other precepts. I vow to undertake to train myself to do good in the world, to do what needs to be done. So it's a training. And by that I mean, we look at our lives and we consider, how did that work out? I do something in a particular way, and I look at the consequences of that and say, well, how did that work out? So there's a constant kind of feedback going on between us and our life and the consequences that we live out. I think it's kind of very important to understand that oftentimes we can cover up what is necessary to do when we act out of some set of rules or ideals about how things ought to be in the world. And we can miss something within. Lately I've been, as I'm sure everybody does, or most people, noticing, of course, there are a number of homeless people around. And it is a painful thing for me to see this, people living on the streets, not being cared for, not being cared about. And when I encounter someone on the street in difficult circumstances, my impulse is to be generous and to help people. Or at least it has been. Lately, it's been arising in my mind that I need to be able to say no when someone asks me for money on the street. The other day I came out of the supermarket and there were three gentlemen sitting on the curb with a sign out asking for help, and they called out to me and said, you know, can you help us? And I had to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And I don't do that, I don't say no in that way lightly. I think it has been my impulse and inclination and the practice of the Dharma to share what I have. I don't typically have very much at this point in my life, but I don't think that's really, I don't really think that that's the kind of deciding factor. In some point, in some way, I've been kind of grappling with the guilt or whatever that arises, the feeling of discomfort that arises when I see people in distress in this way. And I want to do something out of that discomfort to make my own discomfort go away. And it's not necessarily a bad motive. I don't think it's necessarily a bad motive, but it is, in looking at my mind, I've felt that it's a motive I need to look at and be willing to let go of and to be able to actually say no to someone. Sometimes, on a kind of emotional level, it's very difficult for me to say no to people. And so, in some ways, this change, this saying no to panhandlers is, it's been a bit of an experiment, like, oh, what will happen if I actually say no to someone who's asking me for help? See what that's like. And it seems, as I sit still with it, and as I say, let go of my idealism about yes or no, about whether people will like me, all those kinds of things, it seems like a good response for now. It's not my ultimate response. Another day I walked past someone, said no, and then thought about it some more, turned around and went back and gave him some money. So it's not my ultimate response. Part of the thing, so again, doing good in the world is a training. It's a thing which we experiment about. It's not something that is cut and dried. And it is something that we can implement as a practice that we do, an experiment that we do. I can't tell any particular person what is good to do at any particular time. And so I'm constantly just looking at that for myself and asking that question, what is good to do? What is good to do? we'll get into doing good for others in next month as the third pure precept. So for now, I want to just look at discovering the process by which we discover what is good for me to do in the present moment. What's good for me to do in the present moment? So back to the matter of doing only good. The Dharma of Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment is the Dharma of all existence. In one sense, we have an intuitive sense of what's good to do, or we have a sense of what's good to do on a day-to-day basis on a practical level. But to make that into the practice of the Buddha's enlightenment, the practice of the expression of the Buddha's enlightenment, the practice of our own uncovering of the kind of enlightenment that the Buddha gave voice to, part of what we need to look at is our own proclivity for getting into the opposites, getting into the duality of this versus that, of good versus evil, of right versus wrong. Of course, in the Rules for Meditation, Dogen says, when the opposites arise, and by that he means when we give rise to the opposites, the path to enlightenment is nearly lost. And so an important part of the training of doing only good in the world is observing, is really coming to grips with our own tendency to get involved in duality in our own minds, to hold on to sense of right and wrong, to hold on to a sense of what's good and what's evil. And so part of the thing is being willing to let go of our ideas about things, our opinions about the way things ought to be, and to listen to a deeper part of ourselves. What is good to do? What needs to be done? Of course, in that, you may be you may be tempted to think, oh, well, I might head down this road toward doing this thing which everybody thinks is wrong because I want to be beyond the opposites here. And so I'm going to... I'm working on anger. And while it, maybe... oh, never mind, I'm not going to give you a silly example. My point is, the 10 precepts always come to bear in our consideration and our experiment with regard to this. So we always do need to, if we have an intuition of a thing, seems a little squiffy, run it by the 10 precepts. I'm not encouraging you to break the other precepts in order to keep one of the three pure precepts, although that's the kind of thing that may arise. There was a thing where Reverend Master Jiyu used to be quite sensitive to mosquito bites and could easily get blood poisoning from mosquito bites. And so she would kill mosquitoes when they would come around, and sometimes the monks who were her attendants would kill mosquitoes when she would be around, in order to help to prevent her becoming ill. And normally she would make quite a point at saying, you know, we need to be really careful about killing insects, and she would not be, she actually went so far as to take a person that she's, a religious leader that she saw on television, take them to task, to the monks, for swatting a fly sort of unmindfully in the midst of some kind of interview that she saw. So she was quite careful about not killing insects as a preceptual matter, and still she would kill mosquitoes, and the monks helping her would find themselves in a situation where they, it would be helpful for them to kill mosquitoes. And this is a case of, you know, a relatively minor case of needing to do a thing which was a mild breakage of the 10 precepts in order to keep that precept of doing good. And as we examine our day-to-day life from the point of view of the three pure precepts, we may find ourselves in such a situation. And part of the teaching of that, part of the practice of that, is the willingness to accept the consequences of our actions, and to understand that the consequences of our actions may not be pleasant. We set out to hurt someone, we may fall down as a consequence of that. We may get hurt, but we accept the consequences of that action. Part of the thing that I was thinking about with regard to saying no to panhandlers on the street is this kind of notion that somehow I have the responsibility of a God, to take away the suffering of beings, or to make the world into a kind of perfect place. And that is a futile and deluded kind of point of view, that I can take away the suffering of the world, or make it go away, or make this world into a perfect place in an external way. And so part of the training of practice is learning how to accept that suffering exists in the world, and I can't go away, in a large part. I still need to continue, and so part of the training of my own mind is clarifying when I'm acting out of that kind of delusion, that kind of expectation, and learning how to let that go, and to again ground myself in doing what needs to be done, just what's right in front of me as a simple human being. Now again, next time we'll be talking about doing good for others, and that seems to be in contradiction to what I'm talking about, but I assure you that it is not, and that there is. And that I am not saying we should not be kind to other people, and that we should not help other people when we can. In my example of saying no to the gentlemen who are panhandling, there is a precept: do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. Do not be stingy. That is one of the 10 precepts. And so, in my own kind of exploration, my own listening inwardly, it seems good at this point to say, no, I can't help you. And, and and to sit with that and reflect on it. What is the real consequence of that? It is my stated intention to practice as a bodhisattva in the world, to dedicate myself to helping other beings. So what I'm trying to do is really clarify what is my own internal intuition about what's good to do. What is that intuition, not distorted by idealism, not distorted by misunderstanding of my potency, not distorted by overestimating myself and or underestimating myself. So part of the there's again a training in here and a bit of an experiment. And that bit of experimenting is an important part of practicing the precepts, being willing to look at things differently, being willing to listen and hear in situations, and not just be compelled along according to our habits and habitual ways of thinking about things. So that's what I have to say about doing good. Any questions or thoughts that you all might have?
I'm curious what reasoning you used to say no when that time. Or if you didn't use reasoning.
I don't know that I did use any reasoning. Oftentimes, in thinking about it, in terms of like helping people on the street, there's a question, you know, if I give this person money here on the street, will it actually help them in the long run? One of the men said, one of the things they had was they had a sign that said, "I hate bums too. I hate bums too." I had to say, "I gotta tell you, gentlemen, I don't hate bums." And they're like, "What? I hate them." And one of them said, "I'm drug addicted and I, have been in prison and I've done all these crimes and stuff like that." And I'm like, "Well, sorry, I still don't hate you." And as I reflected on it later, thought, well, quite likely someplace in there, in the complexity of that man, it may well be that one of the motives for him being drug addicted and all of that is because he hates himself on some level. I think in part my motive is to own the impulse to say no and to own it in a real kind of way. Because they asked me, and I said, no, I can't help you. And he was like, "Oh, okay, well, thanks." Most of the time, people just ignore me. I don't know whether that was something that he, I don't know whether that was really, he was grateful for that or what, but, so part of it, again, was a bit of an experiment, like, I have this discomfort. I don't know whether it's really helpful for me to give people money in this way. It may be contributing to their drug addiction, their alcohol addiction, or whatever it might be that has put them there, although I don't want to assume that that's going to be the case of why they're there. And part of it wants to just, instead of part of it wants to just, instead of ignoring people or turning away from them when I feel uncomfortable about giving something, to again just own it and say no when that's kind of there. And again, I often will give people money. Part of the thing is the money that I have to give is temple money, and I'm not sure whether that's, again, the best use of that limited resource that I have. And what I did say to them was, I can't help you in that way. The way that I can help you is to, you know, teach about the Dharma in some way, although that may not be everybody's cup of tea. I've considered the matter. I don't want to say that I haven't considered it, but I wasn't really thinking about it so much. I wasn't really trying to rationalize it, more trying to sit still within and see what's right to do, what's really good to do here. Because I can never really, and part of that reflection is I can never really know what's really going on with someone. And whether or not how I act will help them. And so part of my own practice is getting more comfortable with my own instinct on the matter, recognizing I can be completely wrong, and letting go of the impulse to be worried about what people will think of me. So that's some of the stuff I was thinking about in there.
I always try to give to the street food people, definitely, because they try to pull themselves up a little more sometimes.
Yeah.
But I never look just away from people either, because I think to acknowledge them as people,
yeah,
it's important too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a difficult thing. I just, in some way, wanted to not turn away from them in some way, even though my impulse was to say no. So I felt like I needed to say no to them. I don't know if that makes some sense.
It's hard, there's so many, you know. Downtown is filled with them, so.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, on the topic of homeless population, two examples were coming to my mind listening to what you're saying about doing only good. One in which, you know, I felt like, okay, I think I kind of did the right thing there. And another in which I felt like, no, probably not the best. And like for the last month, I go on some days to downtown to one of the family homeless shelters and work there, and I did not expect that part of my responsibility would be preparing food. I thought I'd be more of hanging out with kids and families, but it's a large part is going in and doing dishes and preparing a meal and cleaning up the meal and then hanging out with the families. And so the first time I went, I also kind of said right away that I don't want to handle meat. And I don't want to cook meat, I just don't want to deal with meat, and will that be an issue? And I was told, no, that's fine, okay, you don't need to do that. and it was going okay. And then I saw, like, last time I was there, someone brought sandwiches. And so I said, you don't even have to make snack, just put out the sandwich, cut the sandwiches in small pieces, prepare the sandwiches. But of course, the dishes I was doing before and after, you know, handling the sandwiches and arranging the meat, I didn't say anything about it to the people that were there, and I just did it. But, like, I have this internal dialogue going on around it, and also around even just thinking, like, you know, I have other skills besides, like, cooking and cleaning I could be doing. Is this really the best use of my time here, volunteering? I mean, I want to volunteer there, but maybe do something else. But then another part of me feels like it reminds me so much of being at the Abbey and just working in the kitchen, and I think it's really, maybe it's good for me to do things that I don't necessarily want to do or feel that comfortable doing in some ways. But that does come up, like, I can see that if I'm going to do this type of shift there, I'm going to have to be dealing with meat. It's going to be really hard to not have that be part of my work there because it's part of the environment. People bring in outside food and eat it, and then there are dishes and so on. But I have a question around that, like, what is really good to do around it? Is it good for me to find some other type of volunteer work because I have some little aversion to that, or what? Because overall I feel like it's good. I like being there, and it's good for me on a lot of levels to be there. So, I know it's going to keep coming up, and I'm not sure what's the good thing to do around it. And then the other thing that I felt came up was, like, today I took this tennis class, and I've been taking various classes, and this one, like, not a workout, didn't like the way that the drills were going, it was very slow, it felt like it could be a lot better, and I wasn't happy, I felt like I'd take time off, I arranged my schedule, I pay money, and I'm not getting what I want out of it. And I felt compelled to, like, say something to the instructor afterwards, even though I knew I'd been sort of irritable all day, and tried to ask if she wanted the feedback, and tried to say it in a nice way, but I feel like, I don't know if that was really that helpful to say it, but it was like this drive, like, I've got to say it. But afterwards I felt like it was probably not that helpful, but I don't know, because I don't know what the consequence of it will be, like, maybe it would be useful and she'll improve the way she does the class because I said something. But how do you know? You know, these are the kind of, like, the everyday things that come up where I feel like, mm-hmm. I don't know if, you know, my internal response, my gut response is actually the best response in the situation. And I won't always know what the consequences will be. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I think that's, so to take your first thing, when we're in the midst of people, well, let me just, this is a little rough, but it's by a teacher who I quite like and I've talked about before, Shundo Aoyama, who's a woman Zen master in Japan. I just heard recently, I think I maybe mentioned, she's actually still alive, which was or at least was a couple of years ago, in her 80s now. So she says, she's talking about magnanimous mind, generous mind. And the title of this thing is called Magnanimous Mind, Can I Become a Shit Stick? I'm always very busy when I work as Tenzo during session, although we generally have only about 24 participants, because I am such a slow worker. I can hardly even find time to go to the toilet. One day I rushed to the toilet and the thought sprang into my mind, am I ready to become a shit stick? And you should know that this word shit stick is something from one of the old koans from the Chinese Zen master. Such sticks used to be used like toilet paper to clean the body after bowel movements. A training monk once asked Chinese Zen master Yunmen, what is Buddha? Yunmen replied, shit stick. Through making itself dirty, the shit stick cleans up the filth that, although it comes out of our own body, is so dirty and smells so bad that we cannot stand to be near it. If a shit stick is not a Buddha, what can be? When I realized that toilet paper and shit sticks must surely be Buddhas, I involuntarily bowed in gassho, putting palms together. But if I were appointed to fill the role of shit stick, would it be possible for me to play that role with the delight and confidence I have when I am in the position of abbess? Earlier, she said, while she was abbess, she decided that she would cook during sessions, just as a way to help her practice. I don't think I could. We cannot live even one day without toilet paper, and we will have a mess if the garbage truck fails to come. The garbage men are the most venerable Buddhas, covered as they are with dust and excrement. I understand this in theory, and yet if I were in such a position, the deluded being, the deluded being within me would immediately begin to make objections. Zen Master Kosho Uchiyama said, a violet is a violet and a rose is a rose. Buddha, blooming, withering, aging, and being sick, all of these are roles we have to take. By doing our best to play each role, we bloom as our own flower. Let's adorn the vast universe with this practice moment by moment. This is really difficult. In the world, there are higher and lower roles, desirable and undesirable ones. However, when we see from the world of truth or the world of Buddha, there is no waste anywhere. Everything is precious and irreplaceable. Nothing is meaningless and without value. So, I spent a lot of time in my youth. Well, when I was a young man and starting my practice, I worked in a restaurant, and I would have to cook and serve meat to people. And I actually became a vegetarian when I was like 16, well before I started practicing. And at a certain point, I had to kind of recognize, I'm not eating meat. It is for me. I've clarified for myself. It is not good for me to eat meat, and I know that. And that was a kind of matter of compassion. I don't want to cause that suffering to beings. But everybody isn't the same way, and here I am. I need to make a living, and this seems to be what life has given me as a way to make a living, so I'm going to try to deal with that meat from a kind of compassionate point of view and not despise it as the food that others will eat. And so that for me was how I solved that particular question. And being willing to get myself dirty in my living out of my life, I think is part of that. Being willing, when it comes to the appointment of being the shit stick, to allow myself to be gotten dirty for the benefit of beings and of practice. I'm not like going to go out and look for it. I'm not going to go out and kind of glorify myself by saying, you know, kind of getting myself dirty. But when it comes my way, when this is how I can help beings, then I'm not going to kind of turn away from it. So that's how I handled the matter. How we know the consequences of our actions is by sitting still within and seeing how it plays out in our own body and mind. And so that the question is, how can I sit still in this situation and really see what the consequence is, sometimes with our deeply held opinions about the way things go, that is a very difficult prospect. And again, with our very deeply held ideals and opinions about things, it can take a lot, it can be a fairly long time before we find ourselves in a position where we recognize we actually have to let go of our opinions about the way things are, and the way we think life should be. And that can feel like we're in a kind of box or in a difficult situation, because we hold on to our views of things so deeply. So I can only kind of encourage you to just continue to sit still in the matter and continue, and in some sense value the feelings of ambiguity, and see how it plays out over time. Really, you know, keep showing up in your volunteer. It's exactly kind of what I was trying to say. We think, oh, I'll do a good deed, and then I get these negative consequences for it. So you can conclude, oh, well, I shouldn't have done the good deed. But really, there's something more subtle going on. Maybe we did the good deed with this expectation that we're going to get some kind of accolade. She talks about, it's a really kind of a great article there. She talks about that, like, oh, you know, is everybody going to stand up and clap when I cook for them or whatever, you know, didn't say it that way, but, so we do a thing with that expectation of getting that accolade, and we don't get the accolade, and so then we conclude, well, it wasn't a good idea for me to do the good deed, but really it was a good idea to do the good deed, we just need to let go of the expectation of what we're going to get from it, or the expectation that we're going to, kind of come out untainted in some way. Whenever we get involved with people, whenever we are involved, we have to be willing to accept their humanity in some way. And everybody, you know, like I think sometimes, like I was grumbling earlier about not having much of a choir here, whatever. I think to myself sometimes, I set out down this road. I set out down the road of becoming a monk. It was my idea. Nobody said, you should do this thing. And if you do this thing, we'll like you for it or whatever. It was my idea. I have to take responsibility for it. So, you know, nobody in some sense even asked me to come here to this temple. I just kind of showed up one day and you all kind of said, okay, well, we'll see how it goes. So I kind of have to be realistic and kind of say, well, I can't have any expectation that anybody's going to like what I do or show up or appreciate it or anything like that. I just have to keep doing my best following the practice in some sense. Because it was, like I say, it was my idea to do it. And I have no doubt, you know, I have no doubt that I'm deeply grateful to people who I know who are monks and teachers of mine. I have no doubt that it's, you know, that there is goodness in being a monk. That's not the question. The question is, what are my expectations from what I'm doing? What am I really expecting? What's really going on? Why am I really doing this? And not to say, again, like for being a monk, it's, I should toss it out at some point. I just have to kind of come to grips with, oh, okay, well, I was expecting everybody to, you know, kind of do whatever. I don't know what, but you see what I'm getting at. So, like the thing about the tennis situation, you know, it's a tricky thing because, you know, sometimes it's necessary to say something to somebody, but sometimes it's not. I don't know. So it's, again, a matter of just continuing to be still in it and see what the real consequences are, and to really be willing to see clearly why you would feel the need to say that. Maybe there is a good reason there, or not. But it's not. It's not something that anybody else can really say. And realistically, if someone else said it, would it really penetrate? No, you shouldn't have said that to that person. Would that really make any difference? And maybe that's not really what you're asking sometimes.
And, well, I think also, if I'm honest with myself, I mean, even as I said, like, I think one, you know, was a good thing to do, and one maybe wasn't. I can feel on a lot of levels, like, the things that come up when I do the volunteering at the homeless shelter, like, you know, literally, like, needing to step in shit to help people or get dirty or, like, discomfort that comes up. I can feel that, like, spiritually it's a good thing to do. Like, that maybe it's, at least that's how I interpret it. Like, it's coming up because this maybe is something for me to work on and let go of. Whereas, like, I could immediately feel, like, okay, within the first 10 minutes of that class, I was like, nope, this isn't a class for me. You know, not a teacher for me, not a class for me, I don't want to do this. And I could just know that and not go to it again. And yet, I was saying something just because I was, like, angry that wasn't a good class.
Yeah, there you go. And that's really exactly what I'm talking about. And over time in practice, really beginning to trust your own intuition about the thing. Like, oh, you know, was that a good thing? And when I said no to those men the other day, afterwards, I felt like that was the right thing to have done. It didn't arise in my mind as, you know, something that I was kind of, there wasn't something that left over from it. And well, that's not entirely, I mean, I'm open to the possibility that I could do it differently, and I don't want to get into a habit of not doing something like that, not giving something that way. But really just being willing to listen is really quite critical and important, and to trust yourself.
I feel your first situation, if you would have to work in a butcher shop, I could see that you say no. Can't say no to that, definitely. But I lived with a man who ate meat, and I cooked for him meat once a week too, and even for my cat. My cat needed meat too, so.
See, I feel my cat vegetarian because I can't deal with the smell of it. But anyway, yeah. I mean, it's like for me, it's a strong visceral thing. Like I don't want to live in houses where there's meat cooking, but like that I can see the limit. Like I don't have to cook the meat, but if it's off, if it's there, if someone brings it and I wash the dishes, or if someone brings sandwiches and I just need to cut them out and serve them, it's like it's coming right to me to be able to deal with and without having someone freak out about it.
Yeah, and it may be, you know, again, it may be as you sit with it and are still with it, you may realize for some reason it's just not good for you to do that thing. And again, see what that's like and see what the consequences of it are. I think the really important thing about any of our perceptual inquiry is to recognize that things could be quite different than we think they are. And to whatever, you know, we look at the precepts and we think those are kind of cut and dried or whatever, but they're not. And we really need to dig into them in some way and be still and really listen to the consequences of our actions. We're never going to be God. We're never going to get it completely right. But the more we are still and listen, the more subtly we can kind of understand it.
Yeah, with your aversion to meat, I personally don't choose to eat meat very often. But like, if it's offered to me, you know, I've decided that, like, it's more important to just eat it, not make a big deal out of it. That's something I did in my life. But the thing is, like, people are gonna do what they do. Like, you know, animals get bred for food, you know, in America. That just happens here. That's how it is. And so, like, as much as like, personally, I might prefer that that wasn't a thing, that people just didn't eat meat. But, like, the fact of the matter is, like, people eat meat. So, like, it's still there. It's not like me not having anything to do with it makes it go away. You know, just because I don't like it and don't want to have anything to do with it doesn't mean it doesn't exist in the world. So, I don't know, it's just interesting, because it's like, man, I just wish that wasn't a thing. But then, you know, isn't that Buddha too? That dead hunk of meat? So, you know, it all arises out of the same thing. So, as difficult as that is, let's see. I don't know, it's like, whatever you don't want to see, it's like maybe, well, you should just accept. Or, I'm kind of talking to myself. I forgive me if
it's okay.
I'm not so good at conversing.
It's okay.
To be perfectly honest. Yeah, it's just like, maybe that's a red flag. Like, the fact that you have such an aversion to something means you're not able to accept that thing. And, you know, who knows if that's something that, you know, it would be possible to accept in this lifetime, but, you know, I suppose we all have stuff to work on right in front of us. As hard as it is to realize.
Yeah, and I think it's just kind of useful to, it's part of that thing about not being God in some way. Just recognize people are it's a big world kind of getting smaller, but people have their own karma to bear and to grapple with in some way. They have their own kind of particular issues, and part of the offering we make to one another is to kind of, at least in our minds, give them space to grapple with their karma in some way. I mean, in some way, that's kind of one way you could look at the purpose of the world. Is just to give people space to grapple with their karma. So, and aversion is a kind of hatred. I mean, you know, when we grasp after something, it's greed. When we push something away, it's aversion or hatred. And when we get all confused about something and don't try to convince ourselves that things are as they are otherwise than they are, that's kind of delusion. And so we all are kind of working on those, kind of grappling with those three things. And so that to the extent that we can clarify where greed, hate, and delusion arise for us in its various forms, coarse and subtle, then we can help other beings. I mean, I remember going to a Chinese restaurant once with one of my brothers, and I was trying to figure out if I could get some Chinese food without meat in it. And a lot of times Chinese restaurants, they'll use like chicken stock and stuff like that in their food. And so I was having this conversation with my brother. I was like, well, it's not like I don't know that if they make it with chicken stock, it will taste better. I think it will, but I'm pretty convinced that it will taste better. But that's not really the point. The point is, I want to, for myself, it's an offering that I can make to the beings, the chickens, to not eat them, to not cause them suffering. And I accept the consequence that it's not going to taste as good in some way. But that's just, but the reason I bring that up is because there is a kind of greed in me, the desire to have food taste just right, for it to taste good in a certain way. And so I have to let go. And so the part of being a vegetarian for me is training that greed, honestly. But as I shared it, at a certain point, I also had to make sure I wasn't practicing an aversion to people who ate meat, if that makes sense, and kind of pushing away that thing. Because really, human beings have been eating meat for, you know, millions of years. So it's, you know, part of our animal heritage in some sense to eat meat. And so I can't really be all judgmental about that in some sense. Satisfactory?
So I've got this issue that arises.
Yes.
And I'm just not sure about it. But what it is I get this idea, and it's right for me. It's my right idea about whatever. And so then if somebody else has a different idea, you know, I want to debate to find out where the truth really is, in a way. Or maybe it's more just to assert that I'm right and you're wrong. So it's like, it doesn't matter. And me trying to be right doesn't help anybody. So it's just like, but it just happens, I guess. Maybe it's just a habit because I've just been doing it for so long.
It sounds strikingly familiar. Don't feel that you are alone in that thing. I know for myself that being right, we've been trained from an early age to feel good about being right. I mean, you get the right answer and it's the right thing. You know, you get the A or whatever. And so we're constantly, getting the right answer has been really deeply reinforced in us. And there's a, you know, the scientist in me says there's an adaptive reason that being right is effective. I mean, if you're right, you know, that's a gopher snake, that's a rattlesnake. I don't have to worry about the gopher snake. I need to be really careful around the rattlesnake. Right? Right. Wrong. Yeah. Wrong. So there's an adaptive reason for rightness. I'm not trying to say we should never concern ourselves with right or wrong. But yeah, a lot of the times it doesn't matter when you want to get into that debate with someone. There's a nice thing in Keizan in the Denkaroku where he says if there's an argument, it can't be about the truth.
It can't?
It can't be about the truth. If there's a debate, it cannot be about the truth and the ultimate truth. And that is a kind of useful thing for, it was a kind of useful thing for me to kind of work with. And you'll probably notice, if you pay attention, sometimes during class, I will kind of say, no, that's wrong, in some way. And that's my own, you know, in some ways I'm still grappling with that question of right and wrong. And it gets a little tricky because I'm here trying to help people clarify what correct practice is and how to help people clarify when they're mistaken, and if they have a mistaken view, how that will, you know, lead to suffering in the future. So it's a tricky thing, and I can only, again, suggest being at various times approaching it in different ways. That sometimes, you know, you might say, okay, well, I'm going to just work on letting that go and just sit on that impulse and see how that goes. And then kind of work in some letting go into that whole kind of process so that it becomes not just a knee-jerk habit, but so that you can begin to see when it is good to bring up that point or whatever. Sometimes, you know, you might think, oh, if so-and-so continues walking down the street in that direction, they're going to run into that car. I'm pretty much right about that. Should I say something? No, I'll just sit on it. Well, that would be bad. See if I'm getting at. But for a while, you can give it a try. Really, when that impulse to argue comes up, really try to sit on it for a while. See how that goes.
I suppose that might arise just because I'm unsure, I'm unclear about what's really going on. Like if I really knew the truth, then I wouldn't feel that need probably to argue.
Yeah, I think we feel there's a lot of reasons to why we like being right, and a lot of it reassures us. And the world is vast and complex, and if we can kind of get it narrowed down into a couple of different ideas, then it seems more manageable, but not really. So, join the club.
Indeed.
Ready? Okay. Thank you all.